Before we start, who has used Zookeeper, etcd, or Chubby? I guess forget Chubby. Zookeeper and some other variants. Okay, great. So pretty much everybody, which is great because this talk is gonna just assume a bunch of knowledge. And then you can ask anything at the end if I jump too many things. Okay, so I'll briefly and give a very high overview of Twitter infrastructure. Why do we even need coordination at all? And then how does it all how does everything come together? And then a little bit about Zookeeper as a building block of distributed systems, like what's good about it, what's not so great, and then what's actually bad. And then a little bit about the use cases, what are we actually trying to achieve? And then what happens when you push this thing like to really, really high scale? How does it break? When does it melt down? How do you avoid that, hopefully? And then a little bit about debugging pipelines and like how things talk together. And then the things that we had to develop with to be able to coexist with this. And then how do we contribute back to the open source community? Of course, that's a little bit in my interest as well, because if I can go back, I'm also a Zookeeper committer besides being a Twitter, sorry. So. I also care about the project generally. Let's briefly talk a little bit about Twitter. Used to be, I guess everyone used to be a monolithic app. Now you can imagine thousands of services that need to coordinate and talk to each other, and they basically need to be able to discover each other. Where are my downstreams, where are my upstreams, and so on. Share config data, what features should I enable, what things should I do, should I not do, and all of that has to be dynamically decided. Data sets, like data is big, so you need to shard it, and like you need to decide like who owns which shard, and so on. You need distributed logs, like if I have a cluster scheduler, and I probably have a bunch of standby instances. I only want one active at a time, so I need some sort of locking to be able to decide who does that, and so on. Like primary, secondary, it's the same thing. Okay, so we need to do all of this. And here comes Apache Zookeeper, which is it's great for all of this. It provides a bunch of low-level primitives for basically the use cases that we mentioned before, which are maintaining and propagating configuration, distributed synchronization, which is logs, and then group membership, basically discover endpoints, and so on, and liveness checks, like is whoever owns this log still alive, and so on. Within a few boundaries. Okay, so those are great primitives. We could fairly easily reuse them and build those systems. So let's talk about the good parts of Zookeeper. Why would we want to use Zookeeper for all of this? Well, for instance, there's really good, well-maintained recipes for like locking, for doing leader elections, for sharding, for leases. You get all of that out of the box. And then it's been battle-tested over the years. It's known to work in production. Like, you don't hear many horror stories. Yeah, that's good. And then libraries. You have libraries for all the languages you probably care about. That would work. But then there's obviously not so great parts, which are Zookeeper comes with a concept of a session, which lives longer than like TCP disconnects and partitions and so on. It's a fairly straightforward concept, but really, really hard to get right in your app. Like, you can easily end up leaking sessions, you can easily end up messing it up. So you have to have some care. And like, the base libraries do not provide like abstract wrappers to do all of that. They are really, really low level primitives, so you have to do it yourself or provide a wrapper for all your libraries. Without careful thought, it's really easy for apps to like bloat their usage, like end up using thousands of watches, and we've seen this, to end up doing unnecessary rides. And in the previous talk, it was mentioned the cost with like two-phase commits and fan outs. Like, you shouldn't be too casual about writing into such systems. Like, you should give it some thought, and so on and so on. And then if you have the joy of living in a JVM environment, then you have things like GC passes and all of those things. And those can come with a cost. So you need to think a little bit about what happens when an app is having trouble and it's not able to fulfill the contract with the zookeeper session to keep it alive and so on. Now I'll go into a bit more details. And then in old zookeepers, which we don't run anymore, but I think everyone else does because it's actually the stable release. And you see what I did there. And then, so session setup is super, super expensive there. And that's something that you have to have in account as well. I'll talk a little bit more about that as well. And then a bunch of other things that are just not optimized for the sake of maintaining ordering and some of the provided warranties. And like, for example, checking for ACLs are actually quorum operations. So like, they're super expensive. They're not eagerly done at the edge of a cluster. It turns out that service owners don't usually call exist before actually creating a CNode, and they'll just spam your logs, and that's like super expensive. And more of these cases. And now the bad parts. At scale, throttling support is pretty rudimentary. Like, it's basically no throttling. What it does is it'll just it says like, you are writing or reading too fast. I'll just ignore you for a while without giving any back pressure mechanism, and then the service doesn't know anything, so it'll just time out and go to the next server and try again. So it's really bad. It can go wrong. And then there's no easy way to introspect if a write operation timeout, and that has a bunch of problems as well. And then there's also no out-of-the-box client-side stats introspection, so that's kind of not great in prod. And then server-side stats collection mechanisms is in-band, that is, you use the same port that you use for client traffic, so that could your stats could be unavailable if you're having a lot of, if you're being overwhelmed. And the last arcane serialization format, Jude, which comes from like the first days of Hadoop, I think, and also really old transfer mechanism. And this is important. You probably heard about the Poisson packet PagerDuty post that was out last week, in which there was an IPsec bug which generated a bad checksum, I believe, which ended up generating a zookeeper request which appeared to have a length of 2 gigs or something, which essentially brought the server down. And that's just because Jude is unmaintained. So you can imagine if you were using Thrift or Proggle buffers or something that's like, you know, well maintained, like those type of limits would be like checked and so on. So there's a bunch of corner cases there that you have to have care with. Okay. So again, the use cases. We talked a little bit about configs. What should my app do at runtime? Services, where are my downstreams? Where are my upstreams? And then logs. Who owns this piece of data? Who owns this shard? And so on and so on. And then Zookeeper is, this was tangentially mentioned in the previous talk, I think. So in Zookeeper, the way ordering works is at the start of an epoch, you choose a leader, and then that leader is in charge of brokering all the subsequent writes until a partition happens and the quorum is broken, and then you choose a new leader and so on. And then what that gives you is that all your writes are like totally ordered, like very, very high consistency, which is great, except you don't necessarily need it for all the use cases. So like for service discovery, you could potentially say like, I don't really care if the data is slightly out of date. I'll just get some endpoints which like don't match, but it still works. So I could use read-only support, I could do some other things. So that's something you have to have an account as well. Okay, so let's go over each use case and see how what's the easy part of it, what's the hard part. So take service discovery, for example. Okay, take the Python Kazoo library, which is great library, pure Python implementation of a protocol. So you just, okay, give me a client and connect it to the to whatever cluster. Actually, this is missing a start call, and then just register my endpoint in a given path, and then boom, all my upstreams should be able to find me. This is more or less how you do service discovery. This is good, but there's actually at least two very bad bugs here. Does anyone know what they are? Any guesses? What's wrong with this code? Like live code reviews?
It's Python.
Yeah, I guess. But even if it was Go or Rust or your favorite language du jour, what's wrong with this code? What could be wrong with it? Well, for instance, there's one thing, well, the obvious, we're not checking the return code, but like more importantly, when you issue a create, if it times out, it might have succeed, like it could have gone through, but like the answer never came back. And the problem is Zookeeper doesn't give you any way to check, any cheap way to check if your last operation that timed out succeeded or failed. So that's kind of a problem. So you can end up with, for example, in this case, the registration is idempotent because I'm using always the same path. But in some other cases, if I was, for example, using a sequential node, you could end up with multiple nodes. So then you need to handle that and so on. So that's one thing. So yeah, so that's the hard part. Well, A, Zookeeper mandates a very strict contract, which is when your session is idle, you have to ping the server every 1/3 of a session timeout, which is generally fine, except for when you're not able to meet those deadlines and you start to disconnect and reconnect, which in 3.4 it can be more expensive because you could be losing your session if you're falling behind, and that's expensive and so on. Then there's another thing about this, which is, if we go back, this merely means that there is an endpoint here. It doesn't say anything about, is the endpoint actually healthy? Like, should I actually be sending load to it? And if so, how much load? So sometimes that's people think that's a given, but it isn't. So that needs to be thought of. Like, discovery is not availability, in this specific case, at least. And then partitions. By default, read-only support is not turned on. So so if you're going to turn it on, you need to think a little bit about that, or you need some sort of caching strategy from your libraries, and that needs some thought as well. And then there is another thing, which is every time you need to read a server set or like entries for a given service, you need to perform n plus one, where n is the size of the server set, and that's because there is no opcode for packing like a path and all its children in one call. So you need to pay for all those round trips, and all of that is serialized through that request pipeline. So that's very expensive. So what should we do about that? And then updates are also expensive because as the way watches work in Zookeeper is like you get a message that's like something changed as opposed to like the what changed. So you gotta go back to server and poll and then compare with your state and so on and so on. So that's also slightly expensive. And what I mentioned in the previous code example, there's no way to check if your create's timed out. So there's a bunch of interesting details that you have to think about. And then there's, let's take now the distributed lock-in use case. Let's say, for example, at Twitter, we use the Mesos scheduling framework, which is a two-level scheduling framework, which essentially you have a thing called the Mesos master, and then that delegates the known state of resources, like how many machines do I have, with like how much RAM and so on, to another scheduler, which has specific logic for like either scheduling services or Hadoop or whatever. And the way the Mesos works is you need one active master at a given time, so you need to acquire a log for that. Okay, great. So that should be easy again. Again, Python, sorry about that. So you grab your client, grab your log, and then and then like the lock recipe basically just creates an ephemeral C node under the hood, and then it waits for it to be like the one, an ephemeral sequential C node, sorry, and it waits for it to be like the one with the lower count, and if so, you got the lock, and so on. Fairly easy thing, except the semantics of when you're supposed to release the lock are not well defined. Like, for example, in the case of the Mesos master, it's really, really dangerous for it to have like two masters at the same time, because you could have corrupted state. So as soon as it receives a disconnect, not a session expiration, it'll release the lock. And in a noisy network, that could be pretty onerous. So that's something to think about as well. And finally, same thing. So back to this code, like back here, like again, having a lock also means you have ownership of the data that lock belongs to, but it doesn't say anything about your liveness. You could be, for example, deadlocked. So like there should be some sort of external checks and so on and so on. That's one thing. And then the other thing that we mentioned is like, when should you yield the lock? Like at a disconnect, at a session expiration, and then the session expiration is also tricky because if there's a very bad partition, you're not going to be able to be notified until the partition is over, and so on and so on. And then finally, config distribution, which you could kind of argue is the easiest of the three in some ways. And again, just set the path for your configs, set up a handler for the watches, and you should be set, except for a couple of things. A, size constraints. It's really easy for service writers to just go crazy and like, oh, can I not store like every tweet in the planet there? And like, no, you should not do that. And then there's the problem of versioning. Like C nodes are versioned, except that they go back in time. When they're deleted, they're not permanent. So you should rely on that, but you should check like rollovers and so on and so on. And then the last one is like a typical bad example of a use case, which is blocking in the event thread. Like you should never ever perform synchronous operations when you receive a watch, and people forget and they do that, and then they fail to receive the subsequent locks and so on and so on. So that's another thing to think about. Do I still have people interested in using Zookeeper after all of this? It gets better. And then besides all of that we need to deal with, there's the question of like how much load can all of this take, like, and how much can I squeeze out of the constraints? Like for example, if I need and there was an example in the previous talk in which I'm running things in multiple continents, and if I multiple places, and I need cross DC locks with which expire in less than 1 second, can Zookeeper do that? And if so, what are the constraints of operating with those type of locks? And for example, if I need configuration distribution to hundreds of thousands of clients within 3 seconds, can that be done? And then, for example, we have one of the biggest, or a very big, Mesos production cluster. And so, what does that mean? Like, how does that work? How does it fail? How does it break? And so on and so on. Okay, so given all of this, you say like, okay, we're gonna need a lot of visibility into both server side and client side. So how do we add all those stats and introspection capability so we can actually know what's happening under the hood? So one thing you could say is like, okay, we could patch Zookeeper and like, you know, add more and more and more statistics and more information to tag requests, clients, whatnot, and then release frequently enough, and then we'll just get more data, and that will help us debug every new case that we see. That's a good plan, except that sometimes you might be dealing with very broken old clients which don't take election so well. So you need to think of alternate ways, perhaps. And then because, for example, the Kazoo library, it's great, but it had some issues before version 1.2 or something and didn't take election so well, and so on and so on. And then there's also the client-side thing. Like, there is no proper client-side introspection. So you can patch your libraries and add things. Or and the last thing as well, before I actually go to proper solutions, is out of band monitoring would be great as well, which actually exists in Trunk now, and so on. So a little bit more actually before we go over how to deal with all of that. We've been running what is meant to be 3.5. It hasn't been blessed as stable. There are a bunch of release candidates for the last 2 years. And there's a reason why we've been doing it, because it has a bunch of features that help scaling a lot. One of them is local sessions, which are great. There's a bunch of bugs and things you need to work around, but like they're really, really important. Is anyone or who's familiar with the concept of local sessions? Okay, so for people using Chubby, there'd probably be a good analogy, which is in 3.4, by default, every time you connect to Zookeeper, your session is a quorum operation, like everyone knows about what you're doing. And in 3.5, the idea is that when you initially connect, you get a session which is only known by your server, which could be a follower, the leader, or an observer. And if you want to do reads and permanent writes, that's fine. You can do all of that in your local sessions. But as soon as you want to create an ephemeral C node because you want to lock or you want to do an announcement or something, your session is upgraded. So like behind the hood, a quorum operation is injected or prepended to your request, and then you become global, and then you can keep going. That's fantastic, because in Zookeeper, usually the read loads are dominant. Like you, for every one writer that you have 10 readers. So you'll be having a lot less global sessions. So you really, really want to use local sessions if you're using thousands of clients. And then other thing that you want to do, you could probably do this in 3.4, but if you're extending the server, you might as well do it in something newer, is, as I mentioned earlier, a bunch of things that you would think are cheap operations are actually not. Like, for example, if I'm going to submit a write request for which I'm not going to have permission, so it will be eventually rejected, that actually becomes a quorum operation, and it doesn't get rejected until the two-phase commit is finished. So super expensive fan-out, just to find out that, like, oh, you cannot do that. So you could relax consistency a little bit, but not consistency in the two-phase sense of the word, but in the sense of, like, doing eager checks. Just make sure that whichever server gets your request does a check before forwarding to the rest of the quorum. And that's fantastic. Like, that gets you rid of, like, a bunch of rock services that just are careless about this. Other things like this is, for example, if I'm going to do a write on something that exists already, you could, for example, do early checks on that, and so on and so on. So those are type of things that help a lot. Again, so extensions. How do we make this more introspectable? How do we make it easier to debug? Given the wide variety of clients, like, we have a very, very big matrix of very, very big combination of languages, versions, and services. Backwards compatibility is a must. Like, it's not like, oh, I'm gonna just revamp the protocol and everyone's gonna update by Monday. That's maybe Monday of 2018. But so you need to maintain backwards compatibility, whatever extensions you're adding. So that's a given. And then you could think like, oh, so we talked earlier about throttling. Like, there is no proper way in the vanilla protocol to tell a client, like, hey, you're doing too many reads, you're doing too many writes, or the server is just generally overloaded. You should back off. So because there is no opcode to say that, you could come up with a hack, which is, for example, like, okay, and this is what some SREs came up with. And we said, like, okay, the session mandates that every time you submit an operation, you have a timeout of 2/3 of the session timeout. Great. But there's a gap in the protocol that says that you can receive ping reply is out of band. Like a client is allowed to receive a ping reply for an unsolicited ping. So we said like, oh, great. So when a client is going too fast, can we just not just send fake ping replies and that will reset that timer? And it'll just keep, like, it'll essentially tarpit the client. So we said like, oh, fantastic, we can do that and we don't break any old clients. So that was one way of getting around that. And then the other thing is the Zookeeper protocol, for example, decouples the actual act of creating a session from authenticating yourself. So you connect, you create a session, and then you can do reads, writes, and then if you have the right ACLs, and then at the end, you can, or in the middle, you can just authenticate. Which means that like you don't have mechanisms to know who's talking to you until they decide to identify themselves. So one thing you could do is, and we did this working with some other teams, is we extended a Finagle, which is like the RPC system that we use at Twitter, which is open sourced, and it has the Zookeeper library, which does a bunch of wrapper, which does a bunch of this. We extended it in such a way that it can tag requests and just append extra information, so we can have notions of, for example, process coordinates. Like whenever there's somebody talking to Zookeeper, we automatically get under the hood, like where is it running from? What's its speed? What's its job, task, group, and so on and so on. And that's great. With all of that, then you can do a bunch of introspection and know where are the heavy clients and so on and so on. So things like that, which don't change the protocol essentially, but gives you a lot of extra operational information, are super critical in order to know what's going on. So those are tag requests. Okay, how am I doing time-wise? Okay. Ah, great, 3 minutes, great. So as I mentioned before, is like we initially, when we started trying to understand a bunch of our workloads and figuring out the things that made scaling Zookeeper hard, we couldn't roll the server as fast as we wanted. So we went with like typical hack SREs use, which is like use a middle box to see what's going on. And we wrote a thing in Python, again, called setkTraffic, which allows us to do full protocol introspection. So we essentially deserialize the whole protocol and then apply a bunch of rules like accounting for stats, alerting, and so on and so on. And this also comes with another tool which allows you to, like, because we have so many services using so many different combinations of the library, it's usually too slow to, you know, go read the service code and see like, oh, you're doing too many reads, you should change your code here and here. So this comes with a sort of TCP dump-esque ad hoc traffic dumper, which allows you to see like all the requests and replies and correlate them with a fan out. So you can easily sniff a service and see like, oh, that you're reading too much from this path or from this other path. And then like you can hand that tool to developers of those services and they can easily understand where their bugs are and why is either Zookeeper too slow for them or why are they too slow to talk about back to Zookeeper. So being able to introspect your protocol like over the wire, it's like very, very powerful as having like server-side stats and client stats. While we were doing this, we uncovered a bunch of client and server-side bugs, like magic strings that would cause crashes, unspecified things in the protocols, and things like that. And we've tried our best to upstream most of upstream all of our patches, but to upstream as fast as we can, be good citizens there. So that has been fun. We are also, even though we are out of 3.4 for the server, we're mostly in 3.5, we still use 3.4 for clients libraries. We are helping out doing the release management of the next 3.4 stable branch, which is good because it helps us like retrofit all that we learned in the last year or so. And then I mentioned a bunch of extensions and things. I did not go into details into all of them because I have 4 seconds. But we are running a bunch of internal patches, but we do hope to sync with upstream pretty soon. And that's it.